Born in Detroit and raised outside of Chicago, our next guest was at one time one of the biggest A&R men in the music industry, discovering and signing the likes of Motley Crue, Dokken, Tesla, and Guns N' Roses, among others. He walked away from the craziness of the music industry, retreating to a quiet life in Tennessee, but with the release of the Motley Crue biopic The Dirt in 2019, he was once again in the spotlight. He was recently featured in the Paramount Plus docuseries that explored the hedonistic days of Hollywood Sunset Strip in the 80s, Nothing But a Good Time. And he's currently out in Los Angeles for Motley Crue's Hollywood Takeover shows. Please welcome Tom Zutaut.
Hey, Tom, how are you, brother?
I am good, man. That was an awesome intro.
Dude.
And I'm so glad that you played Live Wire, but I'm great. I'm a little groggy.
I bet.
I might be a little hoarse. Lots of screaming going on the last couple of nights.
But how great, man, to go back to where it all started and to hear songs like Live Wire, which to me, it's again, we all have our favorites, but that's so pure and so staying with the story of how it all happened, the songs that they had that got them signed before Shout. And it's an amazing, man. You got to see it, and here we are again.
I know. It's great to be back, Johnny. I love talking to you, so hopefully we'll continue to do so every now and then.
Yeah.
Ironically, you know, Live Wire is the song that convinced me that this band was going to be the biggest rock band in the world. And, I've been out here. I have a YouTube channel now, and it's called Can You Get Me In? Because what I constantly hear is, hey, Tom, can you get me in? I've heard
That's right.
30, 40 years. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to do a weekly show on YouTube, and I hope all the people I love in Kansas City will subscribe, but just do the at sign, can you get me in, and you'll find it. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to do is, I felt like, you know, my whole life I was robbed of the true experience of just being a fan, so I got this crazy idea that I would go to the Hollywood Takeover and, kind of like ETV where you walk the red carpet. So I walked the Motley Crue red carpet, which would be the line of fans, you know, that stood in line for 20 hours to get a pair of tickets for $19.81, you know, to see this amazing event. And I did. And, you know, I've got videos up of the first night at the Troubadour walking the Motley Crue line at the Troubadour, and then last night I walked the line at the Roxy, and it's just so awesome. And, you know, when I asked people what their favorite song was, a majority of them said Live Wire, and that made me feel like, wow, you know, when I was 18 and a half, you know, like that song, like, you know, pushed me to do everything I could as a teenager to sign a band.
And there's nothing like that the fervor, the faith of the newly converted. You know, when you think about when you love something, you go, this is it. And especially when you're 18, dude, you can instantly become a super fan where you're blind to almost everything else. And you'll walk in and you'll try. I mean, we've done it in radio, like I'll fall in love with a band and then I got to have a giant argument with a program director. And I end up walking out, calling him a stupid old dick because he won't listen to me. And it's really because I'm the newly converted. When you found Motley and you wanted him signed and you're bringing them in, you know, there's a fervor, a fanaticism, I think, that comes with being an A&R guy, because your job is on the line. You have to believe this is the new religion.
Yeah, it's like as the woman who started the Body Shop said to me once when I met her when Richard Branson flew me to London, you know, from Virgin Records. And, you know, she said, if you believe in something, you know, to the core of your soul, your body and your bones, you got to get up on a rooftop and you know, shout it, you know, shout it out loud. Of course, that's a Kiss song, but, you know, shout it to the devil, it's Motley Crue. But, you know, before I went out to L.A. to look for bands, you know, she had said that to me, and it was something that stuck with me my whole career. And, you know, some people thought it made me like, you know, a loudmouth and, you know, and a brat. And, you know, because here's this 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24-year-old kid finding all these bands and shouting out at everybody who would listen and everybody who would not listen.
Yeah, and the Guns N' Roses, you know, people look back at that, I'm sure, and they go, well, Guns N' Roses, I mean, what a no-brainer. It was a brainer. The band got signed, then they sat dormant for a year. You're waiting for them to implode. Axl's up on charges. The band is just at any moment going to destroy itself. And then when the record gets produced, it, incredible as it was for hard rock fans, nobody found it. It didn't have a life until MTV touched it. And then, of course, it turned into everything. But it must have scared the S out of you to sit on that band for a year after you get them signed. A year.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was tough. I was constantly going to David Geffen to get more money because that band ate through money like drinking, you know, too many glasses of water. So,
yeah.
But you know, his belief and 100% backing of my instincts, you know, it's what allowed me to do, you know, the Geffen run. And, you know, I did all kinds of crazy things, you know, down to even, you know, Enya, where David Geffen goes, well, this is weird music. You know, why would you want to do that? I go, well, it's not that expensive to do the deal, but I think she'll sell a quarter of a million. And then she sold more than Appetite for Destruction. And David Geffen called me up into his office and said, you're a liar. And, you know, he had a big red Range Rover with a ribbon on it in the parking lot. And he pointed out his window and he goes, that's what happens when you lie to me.
Which, by the way, I have such a problem with Enya. And I know that the world loves him, but being a diver, it's on every scuba diving video ever made. And I have friends who are dive masters and marine biologists. So I've had to endure Enya a long time.
That's funny, man. That's the chillax after, you know, you've been hyped up for like 48 hours and you need to relax. That's probably why it gets used in so many places like diving,
sure,
float tanks, you know, altered states, you name it.
How is it, man, if you're just joining the show, the great Tom Zutaut, legendary A&R executive, Google him yourself, Zutaut, and find him on Facebook, reach out to him, but Did you get to make eye contact with Nikki? Like, do you guys, is there that moment, you signed that band In the Rainbow, you sought them out, and you are part of their history, period. Now, anybody can say, well, somebody else might have signed them, or maybe not. You don't know. It's easy to say that now, but we never know what the future really holds. You're forever a part of him. Do you guys see each other at these shows at the Hollywood lockdown? Do you guys make eye contact? Do you go back and go, hey, man, is there a moment of emotion there?
Yeah, there's a huge moment of emotion, you know, when we make eye contact. And, you know, for these shows, they come out of their limos, they hit the stage, and right after the show they leave. But these venues are small and intimate, and I'm sure that by looking at him and standing in front of him and, you know, when our eyes meet, you know, it just melts into like a wheel of all kinds of emotions. You know, it's, you know, Nikki and I, it's kind of like your first band. It's kind of like, you know, your first girlfriend. And this, I mean, it's crazy, you know, like to come here, you know, what, 43 years later since, you know, I saw him at the Whiskey and, you know, on that night where I got my way in through the owner Mario. And it's amazing to see all of these events. You know, Monday night was the Troubadour and it was a great show. I mean, you know, I've never heard Vince actually sound better, and he was singing it live. I mean, you know all this stuff about backing tracks went right out the window. You know, there's no way to fake it in a club with no special effects, and you know, it's just, it's raw music. And, you know, that was the thing back in December of 81 when I saw him at the Whiskey, you know.
Yeah.
It was this raw kinetic energy, and they were able to bring that back. And I'll tell you what, you know, even the line of fans up front at the Roxy last night, there was this like crazy, wild, you know, energy just even in the line as I walked the line. And you know, if anybody wants to feel that, just go to my Can You Get Me in YouTube and look at the video. You'll be shocked, I mean, at the difference between the two crowds. You know, the Troubadour crowd seemed polite. The Roxy crowd was wild and unruly to the point where, you know, they had overbeefed security, and security was constantly, you know, having to try and, you know, keep people politely in line. But, you know, people waited 20 hours, 30 hours to get the tickets, and you know, they got there like a day before just to be the first ones crushing the front of the stage. And it was amazing to see the passion for the band. It was awesome to feel the excitement. And there's no doubt the show last night at the Roxy was on fire. And, you know, I heard in the intro that, you know, you found a version of it to play. And I will say the one thing that's cool is, you know, John Five's guitar playing on Live Wire, you know, he brings that song to a new level. And that is the one song he really, really shines on.
No, and it's definitely, it's sad for everybody involved not to see Mick there. Like, there's no way to skate around that. And you know, I'm obviously, that's the perfect scenario. It doesn't work out that way. But I'll tell you, the show I think is going to be the crowning, and that why they made it last is going to be the whiskey. The whiskey looks the same way it did when I was 18. Like, you walk into the whiskey and you look around and you go, dude, this is, it's structurally the same bar, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, you know, the Troubadour looks like it was spruced up a little bit. You know, the Roxy, I mean, it was completely renovated, but it looks and feels exactly the same. And, you know, I was talking to people in there, like, I mean, they did like a 6-month close down and renovation, but nothing looks different. I mean, what did they do, you know? But the whiskey, you know, it's going to be a very special night.
Yes.
I mean, that's the night where I saw the band for the first time. And, you know, I can't wait. And if the trajectory is even better than last night, because last night at the Roxy was better than the Troubadour, man, it's going to be on fire. And I'm kind of excited to see, you know, because I'm going to walk the line of fans again, and it'll be live on YouTube, and it'll be at about 8 p.m. I'll start. In front of the whiskey, where it all started for Motley Crue and for me and my career. And, you know, it's, you know, you feel proud one moment, you feel sad that there's not a time machine where you can go back and, you know.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But that's the closest,
you know,
Tom.
80s music, that's... Johnny, you know, you know, 80s music, it's like better than a psychiatrist, you know. It's just, it's like nothing but a good time, that documentary, you know. 80s music, it makes you feel really good. And, you know, that's what comes out of these shows, and it bonds people.
Totally.
Heck, there was three generations of Motley Crue fans.
I mean, somebody hand John Five a goddamn baby. Now, the baby had headphones on, but I was like, who's bringing a baby to this show, man?
Oh, no, I interviewed him. If you look at the Troubadour, you know, fan walk that I did, if you look at that that interview, I interviewed them, and it was a mom and dad that were Crue fanatics. They're 20-something daughter grew up being a Crue fanatic, and she met a guy that was a Crue fanatic, and, you know, I think they were married, but they were together, and they named their baby Crue.
That's a terrible idea, Tom.
And then that baby ended up on stage in John Five's hand. You know, it was amazing. And then, you know, the proud dad, like, you know, he looked at me, and he was like, I said to him, I said, man, so you created all this, right? Three generations, little baby Crue, daughter Crue, and wife Crue, man. Awesome. And he just looked like such a proud papa and grandfather.
It's fun. And for the record, they were decent. Like, that kid had headphones. It was, you know, hearing was protected.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, it was fine like that. But I just saw the video of somebody passing a baby to John Five, and him holding, I was like, who gave the band the baby?
That was baby Crue, Johnny. That was baby Crue. You know, I asked him, I said, is your next kid going to be named Motley?
Yeah.
And the daughter, right, and the mom of Crue, she goes, if I get my way, it will be.
Good night.
She'll have her own Motley Crue.
Indeed. You, Tom, listen, I appreciate you getting up this morning, man. We are absolutely going to catch up. I got so many other bands I want to ask you about, from Tesla to GNR, and it goes down that list. And, man, I'm so mad. I'm so glad that we made this connection, for sure, man. I'll check out all your YouTube stuff. And as the months go on, I'm absolutely going to wake your ass up and get you to tell some stories, man, because I think you
had
the front row.
You know, Johnny, I hope, like, you know, it'd be really fun if we could do a live event together. And, you know, you could MC and kind of do Q&A, and we could give something to all the rock fans and the Johnny Dare fans, like a live event. And my buddy Corey O'Meara, you know, he can promote it. And, you know, Corey was begging me for a ticket, and it's just terrible because he got sick, and he was so sick that he didn't answer my calls on Tuesday because I had a ticket for him for last night.
Oh, I hope he's okay.
Yeah, we want him to get better.
Yeah, man. All right, listen, for sure. We'll figure something out for sure, man. And listen, I don't know how the book hasn't happened yet, Tom. I really, you have all the stories. You know, your thread that goes through all of these, man, it's you've got so much.
Well, you know, like MTV broke all the 80s bands. So I'm working on the book, and it's a daunting task. And, you know, some people have wanted to make a movie, and it's like, it'd be more like a four-season, you know, episodic series.
There's
just so many things. But, you know, and I mean, I have meetings, you know, all the time. But, you know, the one thing eventually, right, and it'd be in about a month, I'm going to launch a weekly show on the Can You Get Me In YouTube channel. And I'm going to have special guests. And I'm going to also, you know, what I did on the street walking the lines at all these venues for the Motley Crue takeover, you know, I'm going to, you know, have a fan on each show. And you know, because it's the one thing I missed, right? And, you know, think about this for a second. So my whole career, I'm always backstage. So I never really get to experience things from the viewpoint of yourself being out in that audience as a teenager rocking out, you know.
So, of course. No, you were throwing the party. You didn't get to go to the party.
Yeah, so now I'm going to the party and, you know, like talking to the fans about their favorite song and what their favorite moment with Motley Crue was and what they were doing the first time they found them. And, you know, I get to kind of relive what I never lived.
Nice. Listen, Tom, we're going to keep it going. I can't wait to talk to you again, brother. Have a great time in L.A. this weekend. And that whiskey show is going to be phenomenal, man. That'll be the one for the books, man. When they walk down those stairs from the office and they start up.
Boom.
I mean, now that stage is only about, what, 2.5 feet tall? Like, it's just like it was in the day. It'll be a great night.
Put it this way, it is the smallest stage of the three venues.
And
hey, don't forget the Rainbow, man. Like, they had a charity event on Tuesday night at the Rainbow that was insane. And, you know, people were paying huge amounts of money for stuff. The band donated it for a charity.
For Covenant House, charities.
Yeah. Yeah, Covenant House. And it was awesome. And, you know, between the Roxy and the Rainbow, if anyone comes out this way through Saturday, they've got all this limited edition merch for sale in the parking lot between the Roxy and the Rainbow. And There's like limited edition reissues of the vinyl, you know, the original leather records vinyl, and of course, and a poster. And each night is a different color. The Troubadour was yellow, the Roxy was blue, and the Whiskey will be pink. There's lots of cool stuff.
Man, I would love to have one of those. Love to it. All right, listen, you stay right there. Hold on, Tom. I'm going to put you on hold. But imagine that guy's world. Again,
there's so much.
He was also an 18-year-old kid. Now he looks back on it and he watched it. But you remember him in the movie In the Dirt, right? Mm-hmm. Like they were fairly abusive to him because he was a kid.
Yeah.
And they were Motley Crue. And they did things and a lot of things, as a matter of fact.